Hello. Hello, David.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
I'd like to introduce David. David is a well-known analyst in IT, speaker and writer. And I'd like to ask some questions for you, David.
Sure.
First question was about cloud computing. We know the cloud computing is a very interesting term nowadays. And how can cloud computing combine with S plus S in?
That's a good question. I think the way to answer that is to first think about what S plus S means. The truth is that different people use that term differently, but I would argue that software plus services, S plus S, really just means the, at this point, obvious combination of using on-premises software, software inside our organizations, and software in the cloud, software that runs on machines in data centers owned by Microsoft and Google and others. By services, that's what we tend to mean. By software, in this context, we mean on-premises. So software plus services means combining those two things, which in fact is what we're doing. Everyone's going to do this. Everyone's going to use some on-premises and some cloud services and some in the middle. So from my point of view, cloud computing is a piece of the S plus S story. Cloud computing is, in fact, another name for the second S. When people say services, they mean cloud services. And cloud services, cloud computing, more or less synonymous. So that's how it seems to me. And I would argue that with cloud computing, we are, in effect, seeing the emergence of a whole new kind of platform. It's analogous to the shift from mainframes to mini computers, and then the appearance of clients, PCs in the 80s, and then servers in the 80s and 90s, and then mobile phones in the 90s of this decade. We've seen only a handful of these kinds of major platform shifts, mainframes, mini computers, clients, PCs, servers, mobile devices. That's only five in the entire history of our industry. Cloud platforms, I would argue, are the sixth. We're seeing this enormous shift right now, and it's a great thing because here we are in the middle of our working lives, and one of these big shifts is happening. I love this.
Do you think the client will innovate and services will innovate together, or some client or services strategy will dominate?
I don't think any single strategy is likely to dominate, and the reason is that strategies can be copied. It's very difficult to have a strategy and an innovation that is yours only. So I think we're going to see some things be more successful than others, of course. And those more successful things, once they become apparent, will be copied by others. So for example, excuse me, I have small children, and they give me colds. They're worth it, though. When you look at what's happening today in cloud platforms, there's a bunch of different options. Amazon is offering raw virtual machines. Microsoft in Windows Azure is offering a higher level service that leads to the initial CTP of Windows Azure. Google also offers a higher level service in App Engine that is somewhat more restricted. It's Python based, for example, than Windows Azure. Which of these approaches is right? Well, maybe they all are. Which one will attract the most customers? We don't know yet. But I think whatever one does, the others are likely to copy and follow along. So I think no single strategy will, in the long term, dominate. We'll see which one wins in the short run, and then others will fall in line.
And how can play in this picture new devices that appeared in the last 2 to 3 years?
New devices like what?
New mobile devices, new devices for entertainment. Do they play in this strategy?
Oh, sure, sure. If you think about Microsoft Xbox, for example,
yeah, exactly.
Xbox Live is a great illustration of how to use these new cloud services together with on-premises devices. Mobile phones today are using the cloud all the time. There's a way in which mobile phones might even prove to be the most important client for cloud services. When we use them to find restaurants, to do directions for us, to search Wikipedia or whatever, it's a very common thing to use mobile phones to access the cloud today. They're a natural pairing. So I think there's a strong affinity there, a strong synergy between devices and cloud services.
Very interesting. Another question about trust, about trust that we have to between us, consumers, and providers, providers that can provide cloud services. Even 10 years ago, I owned my data. The organization owned their data. And now we push our data to the cloud. And this this leads to a new kind of trust between us, users, and providers. What do you think about it?
I think you're right. I think it's a good point. I would perhaps rephrase what you said a little bit. You still own your data if it lives in the cloud. You still own it. They store it for you. And you're right. We have to build trust about our willingness to store data in the cloud. As consumers, we've done this all the time. We store pictures in our contact list and so on. People have mostly gotten over the fear of storing lots of consumer data in the cloud. But businesses sure have it. Enterprises still have a ways to go, many of them, to trust even a share of their corporate data to the cloud. I would argue that organizations, most organizations, will never move all their data to the cloud. I hope that my bank never moves the core banking systems to the cloud. That makes me nervous. But some kinds of things certainly can go in the cloud where it's going to be cheaper. And so what has to happen is, over time, the cloud data providers, Microsoft, others, have to build trust. Here's what it seems like to me. My wife is from Ohio. Ohio is a big manufacturing state. My wife's father was a steel worker for 30 years. When I go to visit her family, I drive by all these steel mills in Ohio. But the steel mills are all shut down and rusting because all those jobs are in China. If you had gone to my father-in-law 30 years ago and said, your job's going to be in China, in communist China, in 30 years, he would laugh you out of the room. Such a crazy idea. We never trust those people. But what happened is that over decades, China changed. China earned the trust of the rest of the world to a large degree. And now, vast amounts of manufacturing is done there. Why? They earned the trust, and the cost advantage was so significant that if you didn't go there, you were in real trouble. So one could imagine a similar thing happening with cloud data, that over time, the cloud data providers, the storage providers, earn our trust and offer us just advantages that can't be beat. Lower cost, better reliability, maybe even more services. So I think we've learned that we can learn to trust if the incentives are big enough.
Interesting point. And your example of moving steel makers to the China is something that I have to ask you about. When I buy steel from some provider, from steel maker, I can choose. If I don't like steel maker, I can buy steel from another steel maker. And will we ever be in the situation where we can choose the data provider and the service provider of our cloud services and move our data and move our experience from one service provider to another service provider?
You're in that situation today. You can move your data today from one to another. The only question is how hard it is to do. Today it's pretty hard because the providers have different data storage mechanisms, different query languages. You can still move it. It's just a bunch of work. I suspect what you mean is, can we move it without doing any work and then just use the new one with all our software staying as it was before? Is that what you really meant?
Yeah.
I think the answer is no. Think about modern databases, on-premises databases, Oracle, SQL Server, DB2, MySQL. Can I do that with those? Can I move my data or my applications unchanged from one to another? Typically not. There's a strong core of commonality. They all support SQL. They all support relations. They all have similar structures. But the details are different. Sometimes more than details are different. Why is that? Sometimes there are good technical reasons, but just as much, it's because the vendors want to lock you in. It is not in the vendor's interest to make this completely commoditized. Vendors of all sorts of products, even in all industries, avoid commoditization like this. I don't know the steel industry
But I'm willing to bet that what you describe, switching steel providers, it's not as easy as you think it is. I don't know. But vendors just hate that. Vendors hate being commoditized.
But if
so they'll work against it.
Excuse me, if consumers really want to change the providers, then vendors have to adapt to the to new changing situation.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Databases today, SQL Server, Oracle, they don't commoditize. Customers will all love this, but it's not how it is. Just because customers want things doesn't mean vendors have to provide it. Customers are all like price reductions. Will vendors all reduce prices? Probably not. There's a balance here, right, in terms of power. And so I think this is not unique to IT. People sometimes beat up on IT organizations for blocking their customers in. Well, come on. Every business does this. Everyone tries to lock their customers in some way because otherwise you're a commodity and your profits go way down. So it's only rational to first try to do this.
Another question about Azure. Azure was announced only a month ago, and there are ongoing talks about what it is, what will Microsoft's strategy will be on Azure. What do you think about Azure? Will Azure change this Microsoft strategy? How can Azure and Azure Services Platform, if be more specific, will combine with the new, with the, today's Microsoft platform, on-premises platform?
I think there's a lot of things we could talk about. Azure, the announcement of Azure, the reality of Azure, surely reflects a change in Microsoft's strategy because they've embraced the cloud in a major league way. Microsoft has told us that they're spending billions of dollars a year building new data centers for the cloud. So they clearly believe in the cloud. Azure is an expression of that belief as a platform for building applications. It supports apps that run in the cloud in Windows Azure. It also provides services for cloud and on-premises apps in other parts of the Azure Services platform, such as .NET Services. So I think that the strategy change there is evident. It's evident. And the way in which you can use that and the on-premises stuff is reflected also in the fact that, for example, Windows Azure tries to use, not always, but in general, uses on-premises technologies. Windows Azure supports ASP.NET. It supports WCF. It lets you build .NET applications. It doesn't store data in a relational way. It doesn't support SQL. But the logic is .NET. So that notion of letting us use our same skills, our same tools, our same languages in the cloud and on-premises surely is a cornerstone of Microsoft's strategy. And in my opinion, it makes very good sense.
And the appearance of technologies like Azure of course, requires a building of new data centers. And what we see today is the consolidation of IT. Organization that with IT is not their core business move their data centers to move their own data centers to consolidate the data centers to the new to consolidate providers of data centers. Is there any security threat that we that you consolidate all the data centers and that we push too much knowledge, too much human knowledge in these relatively small buildings?
I think that could happen. You could imagine a world where only a handful of data centers supply computing for everybody. You could imagine that world. I doubt we'll ever get there. Think of power utilities. How many power plants are there in the world? There are enough that losing one or two or five or ten would knock out local power, but wouldn't destroy everything. Similarly, I doubt we'll ever get to a world where there are so few data centers that the loss of one or two would be devastating for the world. At the same time, the trade-off there is having all this data, all this processing power scattered around in lots of facilities that are managed probably less securely and less well than the centralized data centers. There's risk there, too. And so a risk-free world is never an option. I guess the issue is deciding which risks are the best ones to bear.
Do you think that, is there any niche for a relatively small data centers or on-premises hosting? Or eventually it will, all the servers move to the specialized buildings that are built within very high security standards and the perimeter across them, etc.?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't think that all computing will ever move into big cloud data centers. There's always going to be a place for on-premises. At the same time, if you are a smaller provider today, a smaller hoster, for example, and you want to compete with big, giant data centers run by big, giant companies, will you be able to? Will the economies of scale be so substantial that you just can't compete? I don't know. I was talking recently with the CEO of a smaller U.S. hosting company, and I asked him this question. I said, how will you survive when faced with these enormous vendors? He said, economies of scale don't really matter. Less than you think, he said. They will not have these large price advantages over us. Was he right? I'm skeptical. But it's his business, not mine. So maybe he's right. We'll see.
And if we see software companies, the giant software companies coexist with the relatively small software companies. They just combine together. And will this scenario will ever exist in the hosting in the data centers industry?
Well, the key issue there, I think, is that the software companies that live together, big and small, are not competitors. If you are a big software company and some small firm tries to compete with you, you'll probably beat them. If they try right in your space, if someone tries to produce Microsoft Word competitors today on the desktop as a small firm, good luck. That's a tough one, right?
That's a great example.
The difference, though, is that with hosting or cloud platforms, not the same thing, but related, you could be in the exact same business. If you're in the exact same business, then you're truly competitive. And it becomes, I think, tougher to have small and large firms survive unless the small firms have some competitive advantage, specialization, or something else they can offer.
Let's talk a bit about security. What we see today is the trend that the users moving from the old authentication, like using login password or smart cards, to a new claims-based authentication. What do you think about the claims-based authentication and the place of the claim-based authentication in the broad cloud computing?
Let me just back up a second. When you think about authentication on the wire, people today use username and password on the internet. They use Kerberos, typically, Active Directory, inside the enterprise. I would suggest smart cards are a bit different. Smart cards are how you authenticate the human being to that local desktop machine. They're not going to go away. Smart cards still make very good sense. Kerberos won't go away. Even username and password might not go away in some cases. The difference is that with claims-based identity, users authenticate themselves to something called an STS, a security token service. They don't authenticate to the application itself. So you get applications out of the business of authenticating users, and you push that off onto the STS. Once you do that, the STS can issue tokens containing a variety of claims, that is, information about the user, that applications can then use to make decisions and drive their behavior about this user. I think this is a great thing. It's a great thing because, A, when applications don't have to actually authenticate users, it's all done in one place with the STS, the apps won't get it wrong like they do today. That's progress. Second, and maybe more important, is that with claims-based identity, an application can be just the same, not change at all, and work with users that are inside the enterprise, on the internet, or in other federated organizations. Today, those three scenarios all use typically different identity technologies. Kerberos in the enterprise, username and password on the internet, and federation technologies like SAML between organizations. With claims-based identity, your app can do one thing, and all those scenarios are addressed in the exact same way. This is beautiful.
And from the end user's perspective, what will change for end users? What will claims-based identity change for an end user?
One of the biggest changes that they will see, if in fact this model succeeds in its full glory, is that just as we now, in the real world, have different identities that we use in different situations, I give my driver's license to a traffic cop. I give my passport to a border guard. On the internet, we'll also be able to have different identities with perhaps different information issued by different sources that we can use at different applications. And so users will be able to more effectively use those different identities through a common user interface, such as the one provided by CardSpace. CardSpace lets users choose an identity by picking out a card on the screen, and that will turn into this kind of token issued by the right identity provider and sent to the application. So the big change for users, if this model goes through completely, is they're going to see a better, more consistent way to deal with multiple identities in their environment.
How can you respond to the privacy concerns of using the claims-based identity?
There really aren't any privacy concerns. There shouldn't be. Because claims-based identity does not expose or need not expose any more data than anything else does today. So really, I think there's nothing extra to be concerned about with privacy in a claims-based world. The issue is, what claims are you sending to the application? And users can see that themselves. Apps can have some control over that. Being claims-based does not inherently bring any privacy threats with it, I don't think.
Another question. David, what do you think about the specialization in today's IT industry? If we, for example, take 10 years or 20 years ago, developers only specialized in a single language, and using this language, they can build the application, they could do anything with this language. And now the languages are so the shift from languages to frameworks, and no one knows all the frameworks, and we have to specialize. What do you think about this kind of specialization?
World's gotten way more complex. Way more complex. And there's just no denying that. I think that the demands on, especially architects, on the people who've got to make decisions about all this stuff, have gone way up. There's a lot more you have to know. So, as an architect, to make a choice on what technologies to use, which I would argue is a fundamental decision for an architect, you can't specialize. You have to know something about all the options to make good choices. And so, in a very real sense, the job of architects has gotten harder. They really have to grasp this broader space. For developers, who have to really work in detail with these technologies, it's also gotten harder, so you're right. I think people tend to focus on something. It's just a language, but a language, and they know ASP.NET, and they know ASP.NET MVC, and they know how to use this data access, and they know a certain sort of thing. So I think that's just the nature of how things have gone. At the same time, we should not expect this to change. We should not expect this to slow down. We should not expect that we're going to have to learn fewer new things in the future. I can't remember how many times I've been in Moscow. A number of times. Always fun to come here. But my very first visit to Moscow, I remember clearly. It was when .NET was first announced. I was giving a seminar on .NET. And I talked with a guy in the audience who said to me, he said, "David, if I learn this .NET stuff, can you promise me this is the last new technology I'll ever have to learn?" And I said, no, I cannot promise you that. But I can promise you that you are in the wrong profession. Because if you ever feel that way, if one ever feels that they just don't want to learn this next new thing, sorry, had enough. I honestly think it's time to leave the business. Because it's the nature of what we do. That there's always new stuff, there's always more things to learn. And frankly, that's what I think is so great about this profession.
IT is an industry has experienced a boom for decades. What do you think? Will it be for decades more, or will sometimes it will be more major business like the cars businesses today, and it will be more less exciting in terms of the new technologies? What do you think about it?
There are cycles. As we speak here in December of 2008, we're clearly in a down cycle and probably headed for more. But over the long term, by which I mean the next 10 or 20 years, I do not believe at all that IT will become a mature, and the subtext there is boring, industry like the car industry. And here's why. It's because what makes IT not boring in the same sense, and what makes it arguably less mature, is that it changes. There's always innovation, always new stuff. That innovation is driven by a couple of things. One is hardware innovation, which just keeps on happening. More and more processing power that lets us do more and more with software. And the second is the raw creativity of all people who create software. Neither of those things is stopping. Neither one. We're seeing better and faster and cheaper hardware all the time. We're seeing better ideas from people all the time. That combination, to my mind, just shows no sign of slowing down, much less stopping. So I don't think we're anywhere close to the time when the field you and I work in becomes boring and drab and flat.
Okay, I'm confident they had correctly chosen an industry for me.
I think so.
Thank you for an interview, David.
Thank you. Great talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.